Just a minute, wait. Let me make a few, you can have your seat. Let me make a few precatory remarks about the argument itself. Each side has 15 minutes. The appellant can reserve time for rebuttal, and under the circumstances, you'll have a clock to tell you, but if you need me to help you do that, I'll be happy to give you a high sign when you've reached the amount of time you want to reserve. We tell the attorneys that they can use that 15 minutes any way they please. It's their 15 minutes. However, we have read the briefs. We understand what's contained in the briefs, we believe, and the authorities cited in the briefs. And so we recommend to counsel that they go immediately to the legal issues and not dwell to any significant extent on the facts. The lectern to my left has two microphones on it, one so that you may hear the argument, and the second so that we may record the argument. We use the recordings sometimes in the preparation of an opinion, and so we ask counsel to remain near the lectern so that we can clearly pick up your voice and be able to understand it in the event that we need to. In addition to that, the oral arguments are posted on the internet, if they're digitally recorded, within a day or two of the argument. So if they're so posted, you can listen to them at home at your leisure on the internet. I would ask that anyone in the room, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but anyone in the room who has a cell phone, a BlackBerry, an iPhone, or other things that go off unexpectedly, please turn it off so as not to disturb the counsel or the court in the course of the argument. Are there any questions? You want to reserve some time for rebuttal? 4 or 5 minutes? Fine. Thank you. Anytime you're ready, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Rich LaPuma, and I represent Pastor Husni and the Indian Peaks Community Church, which I'll refer to here as IPCC. This case presents the question of who owns and has the right to possess and enjoy the church property located on Baseline Road in Boulder. IPCC, my client, is the owner of record and claims ownership in this case by virtue of its warranty deed to the property. The Presbytery, an affiliate of the Presbyterian Church in the USA, which I'll call PCUSA, and the former owner of the property, claims that the property reverted to it when it dissolved a particular church known as Covenant Presbyterian Church that used the property in the year 2000. However, the record will show you that there is no possibility of a reverter because it doesn't exist anywhere in the record. Presbytery conveyed this property by virtue of a
record
warranty.
Counsel, you mean the recorded documents in the county, clerk and recorder. There's no evidence of it in those documents.
In any documents, anywhere in this case, there is no reverter.
Well, let's assume that had the corporation conveyed the land to a bona fide purchaser for value, it might have been able to convey clear title, clear of the claim of the presbytery. But that's not germane here, really, is it?
That's not the issue here. What the issue here is whether this property, I mean, there's no issue that the property is owned
what
by.
What I'm getting to, counsel, is what's in the clerk and recorder's office doesn't tell the whole story.
I agree with that.
If you limited yourself to what's in the clerk and recorder's office, the corporation might be able to convey title free and clear of any reverter of the presbytery.
Absolutely.
But that's not the whole story as between these two parties.
Sure. But what you want to do is look at the entire record. I'm not asking you to just look at the warranty deed. I think the warranty deed is important because it warrants that there are no other trusts, there are no reverters, and there are no other unrecorded interests. However, you've got to decide this case based on whether this property was placed into a trust for the benefit of the PCUSA. And when you do that, What are the things you're going to look at? Well, A, you are going to look at the deed. Certainly the Burnson case and the Dickey case both tell us, let's look at the formal title first. But like you say, that's not the whole story. So what else would you look for? Well, you'd look for traditional trust instruments. Where would a trust or a reverter of this sort appear? Well, it would appear in the deed normally. That didn't happen here. It might appear in a separate trust document. No such document exists here. It might appear if it's a testamentary trust in something like a will. Of course, nothing like that occurs here. And finally, you get to the situation that we had in the Moat case in the 1980s, where it was held that the Presbyterian denomination, or any national denomination, can implement a trust clause, as they did here. And if the local chapter, or the local, in our case, a corporation, placed that property in trust or made it subject to that trust, then you might have either a possibility of a reverter or some other sort of trust interest. But again, that doesn't exist here. Because in
Counsel, let me interject a question when what doesn't exist. Covenant doesn't exist. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so when now.
And your client took the position that covenant ceased to exist. It's no longer.
In the year 2000, the ecclesiastical organization, which was an unincorporated association called Covenant Presbyterian Church, was dissolved. That there was clear testimony in the record. It was a unincorporated association that was formed all the way back in 1983, dissolved in the year 2000. So today, Covenant doesn't exist, but the corporation that is now Indian Peaks continues to exist and has existed from 1992.
And Indian Peaks assumed the nonprofit corporate structure, purchased it? How did that transfer?
None of that happened. The unincorporated association, or this ecclesiastical organization, formed IPCC for the purpose of receiving and holding this property that's at issue in this case. However, at that time, they did not subject the property to any trust.
So Covenant did not convey the property?
No, the presbytery conveyed the property to the corporation directly. There was no intermediate transfer of the property to the Covenant organization. The presbytery gave a warranty deed that said this property is free from any trust. You have a trial court finding that says that after that happened, this property was never placed subject to any trust by any signed writing.
But I think the question is, what formal actions were taken corporately to transfer the management of the Covenant Corporation to IPCC, other than the recording of a name change statement apparently with the Secretary of State, with some interlineations as to who the people were?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand the distinction here between the separate ecclesiastical entity and the corporation that's formed under the laws of the state of Colorado. There's never been any transfer. IPCC as a corporation was formed in 1992, took the warranty deed to the property, and existed today.
Just a minute, counsel. IPCC was not formed in 19, whatever the year was. IPCC, that was the Covenant Corporation under the control of the Covenant Church. My question is, that the Covenant Church ceased to exist as an ecclesiastical body, as you point out. What formalities were undertaken to transfer the ownership and control of that nonprofit corporation to IPCC?
Okay, we have to put this in context of sort of how the facts developed, because IPCC originally was formed under the name Covenant Presbyterian Church of Boulder, Inc., a nonprofit Colorado corporation. Throughout the 90s, it operated as a Presbyterian church. It failed. Pastor Hoosney came as a visiting pastor because this church didn't even have a pastor. He preached more frequently as time went on. Ultimately, he attended their board meetings. Now, they had a board. They called it a session because they were operating under Presbyterian rules, but they had a governing party. He shared his vision for he said, look, I think you can do this, this, and this to make this church recover, to bring it back to life. At the time, there were like 11 at one service. There were 13 at one service. This was a failing church. He came in with a vision, and the leaders there elected him as the moderator, which is basically electing him as the president of this corporation. And that's how he became involved. They still had a board. They still had a group that was in their leadership position. They didn't call it a president or board of directors, but we know from the Trout versus Horst case that whatever the name is,
so his election,
they're the director.
His election as, he was elected as president of the corporation by the successor interest, the people who were starting a separate congregation, or were they still at that point a Presbyterian congregation?
No, they still were operating as a Presbyterian congregation.
And what did the presbytery do with that?
Well, that's what caused all the trouble. At first, the presbytery objected because Pastor Husney, as you know, is a non-denominational pastor. He didn't have the credentials of a Presbyterian minister. So the presbytery became involved. And over time, what they did was they developed this plan to allow this particular church to be run by Pastor Husney, to allow it to grow. They dissolved the church as a Presbyterian church. They allowed for a new congregation to use the facilities. I think the Presbyterian official minutes of their meeting where they did this are very clear. They said,
and you said use facilities, not own.
No.
Said use. That's why I'm trying to...
I said use, but I meant own, because here's the thing. The official minutes of the Presbyterian meeting are very clear in two respects. First, they say that the members and facilities of their old Presbyterian congregation will be incorporated into the new church, and they took these actions of dissolving the old congregation with the explicit, it's in the record, with the explicit understanding that this property, or that the corporation, the IPCC corporate shell, was going to remain as the owner of the property and remain in existence without being dissolved. In other words, we're dissolving the ecclesiastical company, we're leaving in place the corporate entity that owns the property. And then look further.
Let me just clarify. You're saying the presbytery minutes reflect that they believed IPCC would own the property.
They don't reflect that. They say
that's what you just said.
Well, they say that. It's very clear from reading the Presbytery meeting minutes. There are four resolutions that were passed there. First, they approved this dissolution of the ecclesiastical organization with the express understanding that the corporate entity would continue. Second, they affirmed that the property would be used by the corporation for a new church development, which was Pastor Husney's church. Then they explicitly committed to supporting Pastor Husney's continuing work, and they basically retained some interest by saying, we have this Lafayette Administrative Commission that's going to oversee and have some supervisory authority. However, there's an explicit regulation on that authority that says this authority has to be implemented for the benefit of the new group. In other words, this church was going to have this property and use it, the idea being that they would regrow the church under Pastor Husney, who is not ordained as a Presbyterian minister and not subject to the Book of Order.
So they never recognized his role as a Presbyterian minister.
They recognized his role as an organizing evangelist, not a Presbyterian minister, but they basically sanctioned what he was doing with this particular property. Now I see that I'm down to 4 minutes, and I would like to reserve this time for rebuttal, unless you have other questions right now that I can answer.
That's fine.
Good morning. May it please the court. Brent Rickner representing plaintiffs. The judgment should be affirmed on three independent grounds. First, at the most basic level, defendants have no standing to claim any interest in the property. Their entire claim at trial rested upon the theory that Indian Peaks Community Church, or IPCC, succeeded to Covenant Presbyterian Church's rights when Mr. Husney filed a one-page report with the Secretary of State in July 2000, which purported to change the name of the corporate name to IPCC.
Now, I take it the Secretary of State accepted that, and it's been called that since then at the Secretary of State's office.
The Secretary of State did accept that filing. However, the trial court rejected that theory as unsupported by the evidence. So the judgment must be affirmed if there is...
Let me, I know you said 3 points, but let me dwell on this first point, because that's why I was asking opposing counsel some of these questions. Was the same board in place from the Covenant Board to the IPCC Board when the name change occurred? In other words, did the prior board, is this a successor, truly a successor corporation, did the prior board continue to maintain board authority over the corporate structure and authorizing the name change and continuing the existence of the corporation?
Absolutely not. And that's why the judgment must be affirmed if there is substantial evidence supporting that finding by the trial court that there was no legal successorship. And to fully answer that question, Judge Furman, at the time of dissolution, there were 7 voting members. Each of those members had their membership transferred to the presbytery upon the dissolution. And during the presbytery meeting in which covenant was dissolved, Mr. Housney himself clearly acknowledged that IPCC, a remnant group of persons under his direction, was a new church, and that covenant no longer existed. So there was no congregational unity or continuity from covenant to IPCC.
Counsel, were there any, is there anything in the record that would suggest that anyone authorized Pastor Housney to file that name change?
No, in fact, the evidence is to the contrary. This issue was not really addressed in their opening brief, but in the reply brief, as he did today, the single thread he raises is the allegation that Mr. Housney was elected by covenant as moderator, which he equated with president of the corporation.
Why is he a party to this case?
Pardon?
Why is the Reverend a party to this case? He doesn't claim an interest in the property, does he?
I believe that because his action was unauthorized and because at that point they would be an unincorporated association, we did name him individually for because he took action that was unauthorized in any way. But going back to, again, to that single thread that they claim that he was had authority because he had been elected as moderator in June 1999. But Defendant's Exhibit B6 shows that Covenant understood shortly thereafter that Mr. Housney could not serve as moderator under the PCUSA Constitution, and he would be replaced by a moderator appointed by the presbytery.
Well, now you're using terms moderator, and I understand that that's ecclesiastical. Is that equivalent to president of a corporation?
I believe under the Book of Order, the moderator as a member of a session would serve as a trustee, but it's not equivalent to that. But even if Mr. Lapuma could equate the two, again, the evidence shows Plaintiff's Exhibit 41 that the presbytery appointed a Frank Gibson to replace Mr. Housney as moderator for Covenant in July 1999. And Defendant's Exhibits B8 and B9 show that Mr. Gibson remained in that position through the dissolution in February 2000. So when the presbytery dissolved Covenant, Mr. Housney was not in any way a corporate officer or director of Covenant, and he could not have had any authority to take control of the Covenant Presbyterian Church Corporation.
And Mr. Gibson's role then terminated upon dissolution?
At that point, yeah, if you look at the minutes in February 2000, the presbytery took control, had the authority, and replaced the session for that dissolved congregation. Let me also explain how the record shows there was no congregational or corporate continuity between Covenant and IPCC. The minutes, which were actually videotaped, and so we had an accurate record of what happened at that meeting in February of 2000, and they show that during that meeting, they did discuss options for the property, and they discussed that they would leave the options open. They might decide to sell the property, and it would be used for a new church development. And those minutes make it clear that that new church development was not the group that was meeting under Reverend Housney. It was the new church development that would be under the authority of the presbytery. So clearly there's substantial evidence to support the trial court's finding that there is no legal successorship in interest between Covenant and IPCC. So no matter what else you you find on the other legal issues, that would be sufficient to affirm the judgment. The second independent basis for affirming the judgment is that the trial court correctly found the facts here are indistinguishable from the Colorado Court of Appeals decision in Golden Lodge in 2003. As in this case, Golden Lodge involved a supreme governing body, a grand lodge that governed local lodges in its geographical area, and then at the lowest level, a local lodge that is chartered by the Grand Lodge. And the Grand Lodge's constitution provided that when it revoked the charter of a local lodge, that the local lodge's property reverts to the Grand Lodge. So when the Grand Lodge did revoke that charter, the court enforced the organization's reversion rule and quieted title in the Grand Lodge. So as in Golden Lodge, the PCUSA constitution clearly and unambiguously provides that local church property reverts to the presbytery when a local church is dissolved as a particular church of the PCUSA. Defendants didn't even mention Golden Lodge in their opening brief, but in their reply brief, they say it's distinguished because in that case, the local lodge did not dispute that there was a reverter if the revocation followed proper procedures. This is no distinction. Here, as in Golden Lodge, it's undisputed that the PCUSA constitution has a clause requiring reversion of the property rights to the control of the presbytery upon dissolution. And unlike the case in Golden Lodge, here there's no dispute whether there were proper grounds for revocation because Covenant Presbyterian Church itself requested the dissolution. Its session voted to dissolve. In addition,
and that was in January of 2000?
I think there were separate votes in December of 1999, I believe, by the session, and then in January by the congregation. And there was also uncontradicted testimony that Covenant intended to be bound by the reverter clause and incorporated the clause into its articles, whether you consider the applicable articles to be the 1983 articles or the one-page articles that were filed to cure a lapse in filing in 1992.
Is this a continuing corporation from 1982, or is it a new corporation?
It is a continuing corporation from 1983 until dissolution in 2000. The 1992 articles, again, it was a one-page filing prepared and filed by a gentleman named Larry Gupton, who was serving on the session for a covenant at that time and for many years.
And the purpose was to reinstate the original corporation?
Mr. Gupton testified without any contradiction that they were for the purpose of reinstating, were not intended in any way to change Covenant's relationship as a member particular church of the PCUSA. And that in fact, those 1992 articles he testified were never discussed or voted upon by the board or session of the congregation. And in fact, he also testified that when he filed those, he intended with a statement in those articles to incorporate the reverter clause from the PCUSA constitution. And he also testified without contradiction that the session of Covenant Presbyterian Church understood they were bound by the PCUSA constitution and by the property rules that were contained within the constitution.
And did that corporation cease to exist in January of 2000? Is that your position?
Yes, I think as a practical matter and a matter of fact that it did cease to exist. While the rules of the PCUSA suggest it's dissolving, the ecclesiastical entity of Covenant Presbyterian Church, that the actions taken would also mean that the corporate entity would be dissolved, and that's because, again, at that time, there were only seven voting members of the corporation. All those voting members had their membership transferred to the presbytery, and under the bylaws of Covenant Presbyterian Church, it was the session that acts as corporate trustees, and the session must be elected.
What document are you referring to?
Pardon?
You're referring to what document? The bylaws?
The bylaws of Covenant Presbyterian Church. They were Plaintiff's Exhibit 22, but it's the session that acts as corporate trustees. The session must be elected by eligible members, and with no remaining session and no remaining members, the corporation effectively ceased to exist at that time.
Is there anything in the record that would indicate that there was any effort to elect any new directors?
No. In fact, Mr. Husny conceded in his testimony at trial that there was never any election after the dissolution. He also testified that Indian Peaks never even looked at the articles or bylaws of covenant because it was a new church in his mind. So again, there could not have been an election under those facts. And finally, the third independent ground for affirming the judgment is that the express trust clause of the PCA USA Constitution should be enforced just as the reversion clause. The facts established at trial are much stronger for the enforcement of the express trust clause in this case than in the Seminole Moat decision decided by the Colorado Supreme Court in 1986. Here, unlike Moat, we do have an express trust clause in the denominational constitution, and Moat specifically followed the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Jones versus Wolf. And there, the Supreme Court specifically held that a denomination may amend its constitution to create an enforceable trust on local church property. And Moat held the local church property in that case was held in trust for the denomination, even though legal title was held solely by the local church, and there was nothing in the local church's articles or bylaws that specifically said it was holding the trust.
How do you respond to the argument that there is nothing in the public record to demonstrate that there is any sort of trust or any sort of reverter interest in the presbytery?
Several responses, Your Honor. First, that would be the facts of Moat and Golden Lodge as well. And there again, the courts enforced the trust, even though there was clearly no recorded trust interest. And also,
well, here the property came to the corporation through the presbytery. The presbytery bought it originally, conveyed it to the corporation. Is that true of the other cases, or did those lodges or organizations buy their own property independently, or do you know?
In Moat, the record is clear that the local church purchased the property and never had any financial support from the denomination. But again, here in this case, Mr. Gupton, who was a leader of the church and on the session at the time the covenant received the deed from the presbytery, he testified without contradiction that covenant understood, though they were taking that deed, that it was still subject to the PCUSA Constitution, including the property provision.
So you're saying it doesn't have to be in the record. It doesn't have to be in the public title record.
That's correct. Again, as long as you're not dealing with a BFP who purchased the property, it's clearly not the case here.
So had IPCC conveyed the property to a bona fide purchaser for value, bona fide purchaser for the audience edification is someone who doesn't know about this. They just know there's a piece of property and they're buying the piece of property. They know nothing about the Presbyterian Church. And they pay value for it. That person might have taken free of this reverter interest.
I have not seen any published decisions on that. I think it would create more of an issue than the facts here. But clearly,
wouldn't that turn on if it were the entity was purchasing from the presbytery versus the local corporation?
That could make a difference. I would also state here that actually the articles were recorded, and so a purchaser would have had an opportunity to look at the articles, which indicated that they were intending to incorporate the reversion provision from the PCUSA Constitution. That may have put a BFP on notice. And the record also reflects on that issue, and as testified to by Mr. Gupton, specifically that the denomination publishes a companion to the Constitution, which specifically addresses the issue of a presbytery as a matter of routine, will transfer title to the congregation when it assumes full self-support. Then it goes on to say, in the future, if the congregation ceases to exist, the property will be transferred back to the presbytery to keep the trust of those who have contributed for the purpose of establishing and maintaining a Presbyterian church. I see my time is out.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
As
As a general observation, what I'm seeing is that the presbytery is relying on a lot of speculation, a lot of subjective intent, and they're trying to get you to ignore what the documents objectively show was the intent of the parties. Listen to these arguments. He's telling you that this corporation was a continuing corporation from 1982 until the present. That's absolutely wrong. The first corporation was dissolved. It was dissolved and it wasn't reinstated. What happened was they formed a new corporation. Did the articles of incorporation from the first company apply? No, they filed different articles of incorporation.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Is there any indication that anything was done on behalf of this IPCC corporation, other than the filing of this two-page report? Was there ever a meeting of the members of that corporation formally called? Was there ever a meeting of the board of directors?
They had regular meetings. They had regular meetings. They called them meetings of the session. They're in evidence. They're in the record.
No, Pastor Houston. Not the Ecclesiastical Committee. I'm talking about the corporation after dissolution.
Yeah, well, they operated together. I mean, there weren't separate and distinct meetings. So they what you basically had was a session that was running an ecclesiastical organization and at the same time running a corporate organization. So these meetings happened simultaneously, but the same people that were the leaders of the ecclesiastical organization also were running this corporation. And so when they hold an election and say Pastor Husni is our moderator, well, when the presbytery comes in and says, I'm sorry, the Book of Order says you can't do that.
I'm talking about after dissolution.
After the dissolution?
After January 2000.
After January of 2000, they continued to have meetings. They amended the bylaws. They amended the articles. Yes, all those things occurred.
Bylaws did they amend, the 1983?
Well, there were no bylaws before. They adopted new bylaws.
Did those people assume they owned this property?
They did. They questioned. They didn't know. Here's a problem. We're getting into, again, this irrelevant subjective intent. There were questions that you can read their minutes after the dissolution, and they said, I don't know. Are we owning? Are we renting? The presbytery is claiming the property. What do we own? They tried to do research. They didn't understand what they were seeing. That's all in the record, but to me, it's all irrelevant because the question here is whether this property was subjected to a trust for the Presbyterians, and it was not. There is no document. This case is not like Moat. It's like the Bressler case that I cited in the briefs. All the cases are the same. All the cases give you the same legal framework. You can create a trust by having the national organization give you a trust clause and then the local corporation or organization doing something that objectively manifests its intent to be subject to those provisions.
Well, this corporation did that.
Didn't happen.
Under a covenant church, this corporation did that.
Absolutely not. They did not have articles of incorporation that subscribed specifically to the Book of Order. They did not have bylaws that subscribed to the Book of Order. Even the old 1982 bylaws and articles didn't create a trust in the way that it's required to be created under Colorado law. And he mentioned the Golden Lodge case. I got a few seconds. Let me just mention that. It's completely consistent with the other cases. In that case, there happened to be a reverter, and nobody disputed that the reverter existed and was valid as long as certain procedures were followed. That's not our case. Our case here, first of all, there is no reverter. It's nowhere in the record. The trust provisions that they have are limited. They allow the presbytery to direct what would happen to the property if there was a trust. I'm telling you there wasn't a trust, and if there was, the presbytery is the one that directed that this property would go to IPCC. That's why it's ours.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for their arguments and their briefs. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.